This week on RSBNB Update, Fossil Island is confirmed, but all is not as it may seem. We run through the Comp Cape rework while highlighting the true benefits of this update. Then a discussion on art, audio, and ambience, and the theory to end all theories of the Land Out of Time. This is RSBNB Update, episode 730, recorded Thursday, June 27th, 2019. The Theory Out of Time. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Hannes and myself are here, as we are each and every week. And, you know, we thought about getting a guest for this week, right?
Yeah, we did.
I thought, oh, maybe we should get David to talk about the Reaper stuff. Or maybe we should get someone who was hoping for the more widespread kind of update, like Perdassius. But what we decided on in the end is that we talked about most of the Comp Cape rework design previously in the past. And the design hasn't really changed since we last saw it.
We talked about it extensively.
We did. So what we're going to focus on with that is what it means for people who do not currently have the Comp Cape. And neither of us currently have the Comp Cape. So we actually have some information on this. And I've been in contact with people who were trimmed and people who were trimmed back in 2011. And I've also been in contact with, of course, some people who don't have a Max Cape as well. So suffice to say, we do have the full story on it. And I think the bulk of the story about the Comp Cape rework is going to focus on people like us, right?
Yeah, I think so. It should also focus on Tannis being right and then talked out of being right. And then what I said was probably going to happen totally happened.
Okay. Is that about the Comp Cape rework or the other topic?
The Comp Cape. Okay. Oh, no.
All right.
No,
well,
you
can bring that up.
I was wrong on the other topic.
Okay.
Comp Cape I nailed from early on. Yeah. I just got talked out of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with something else. And, you know, I want to start with something that is not the Comp Cape rework because I feel that this one is the simpler update. And this is Breaking the Storm. This is the two-week-ish give event that started on the 24th and will be running until Sunday, July 7th in the run-up to the launch of the Land Out of Time. And this is a community-building event at the dig site. Now, I actually have to go through this right now because, you know, when I logged in this week, I got the absolute shock for me. When I logged in this week, in a flurry of other login messages about the Comp Cape and things that were changed, lo and behold, it says that you should head to the dig site and talk to Mr. Mordeau and help build the boat to head to Fossil Island.
Dun, dun, dun.
And there
That's
we have
it,
it
said.
Folks. There we have
That's
it.
That's what it said.
There we have it. And yep. Also with this, you head to the island and you talk to Mr. Mordeau. And he says, at the behest of King Rold, I am leading an expedition to Fossil Island. So even Mr. Mordeau, who is watching over this event and is leading the expedition, is calling this Fossil Island in-game.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe we could have been led astray because we really kept believing what Jagex had been saying in the past and had always said and done, and maybe a certain other producer did not look at it through any kind of lens and just said, called a duck a duck. It walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, must be a duck.
Yeah, I think he did. And of course, You're talking about Sirion. And I was vehemently opposed to calling it Fossil Island until I looked at all the evidence and, you know, looked at this and saying, hey, okay, they're not calling this primarily for a branding point of view, but we might have another reason for that later on in the show when we talk about the lore video that came out this week. So,
well, there was definitely a twist to it, but
yeah, there's a bit of a twist to it.
Yeah, I don't know, though. I do feel a little foolish that we were toeing the line.
And you know, part of me, part of the reason I also felt that we shouldn't be calling it Fossil Island and why I think that the community ran away calling it Fossil Island is because that's, of course, what Reddit came up with first, okay?
Oh, well. Well, I'm, you know, yeah, maybe, but we saw a video with dinosaurs in an island. I mean, I'm sure.
But they were alive. They weren't necessarily fossils.
Well, more on that later, right, Shane?
Yeah, indeed. and you know, I think this is perhaps a double take. We're going to be doing a double take on this, but we'll save that for later because, yeah, well, it looks like it is indeed Fossil Island all confirmed right now. There are other things as well that can come into play with this. So let's actually just talk a bit about the event that's going on right now. And oh my God, phase one, farming, wood cutting, and construction.
Boom.
This started on the 24th and went until Thursday the 27th. And, you know, farming and wood cutting and construction, okay, we got of course, the player-owned farm, which perhaps is a bit too much XP in this day and age.
Ixnay on the too much XP, say, Shane.
I'm just saying the way I feel it, because I'd like to interact with the farm, but I don't want to hit 200 mil.
Well, start another character and interact on that farm.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It takes no time. I mean, I can attest to that.
Yeah. Wood cutting is also available there. And this is the one I'm the most enamored with this week because the wood cutting at this event is quick actions, which combined with the release of the Sentinel outfit this week, the Woodcutting Elite Skilling outfit, in probably about 3 hours so far at this event, I've earned over 10,000 fragments for that outfit.
Really?
Yeah. So this is really good for those woodcutting fragments.
Yeah. That's nice how that partnered up then.
Yeah. Now, phase two, which kicked off on Thursday, is smithing and construction again. Which of
construction
course
again?
Yeah, you're using it to build rivets and then forge them onto the boat.
I am a sucker for free construction. I mean,
and you know what's more? You're going to be able to keep doing the farming and woodcutting, keep doing the construction, and keep doing the smithing even after the phase has ended. So Jagex is really nice in that regard.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's an improvement. Usually when we see these events, it's just a rotation of things. That's kind of cool that keeping it all.
Yeah. So I'm pleased with that. Now, continuing on, phase three will be magic or invention. That's a bit interesting. Invention, an elite skill.
Yeah. I don't think we haven't seen invention in any of these, have we? These builder.
No.
I didn't think so.
And phase three begins on the 29th. Then the final one will be, quote, channeling energy into the hull or using crafting to sew a new set of sails. So obviously the first one is divination, and this starts on July 4th and runs to July 7th. And with this, you can get 500 building materials per day when you're completing skilling tasks, and you can earn materials as well throughout the rest of the world. So it's just like any other event. And, you know, I think the reason why you want to do this is one thing. But there's actually something else that came from this that people were a bit surprised about and weren't really expecting when it launched. And do you remember that little mysterious egg that we got from the Easter event?
I don't think I got an egg.
Yeah, everybody got this Easter or this unhatched egg from the Easter event, and no one really knew what it was for. But when you look at when you logged in this week, you got a message that said that this egg had hatched, and as a result of this, you are now the owner of a mysterious egg pet and a mysterious chicken pet. For some reason, okay, they're tied in with this event. I think it might have to do with, I don't know, maybe eggs hatching on the island, perhaps dinosaur eggs hatching on the island. I don't know.
Or maybe it's not a chicken. Maybe it's a dinosaur. I mean, birds and dinosaurs, right?
Well, I mean, it does look like a, like if you look at it, it does look like a, it does look like a chicken. So
does look like a chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to set up our own stuff there, right?
Uh huh.
We might be using this to set up, like, I don't know, chickens.
Oh, that
you know
might
mean? Like, we have our little homesteading and, type thing.
And, I mean, you won't necessarily use this one because it's a cosmetic pet that just follows you around, but it's the idea that counts, right? So,
right.
So that's so those are two things that happened when you logged in this week. And if you didn't have your eyes open or you were not paying attention to your login text, because there is a whole wall of login text when you logged in this week. There's like probably about 8 to 10 lines about the CompCape rework, then another one about Mr. Mordeau, then the summer special, more about the CompCape, and then of course you get into your friends chat and clan messages if you have any. So there is definitely a lot there on that. But
yeah, and I never look at that when I log in.
Yeah. So now I think the next thing we can talk about with this, aside from the chicken, which I mean, nice little pet, and if you miss that when you're first there, just head on into your companion pets and you'll find it. But then we also have the rewards for this entire event. So you start off, and the cosmetic set that you're going to get from this is the Varrock Agent's armor set. You're also going to get two mystery boxes, which, of course, award the usual prismatic lamps and stars and whatnot. Not too much to write home about there. The Varrock resting or Varrock flag resting animation. And the Mr. Mordeau Jr. pet. And then finally, should you get all the way to the end at 20,000 points, you'll unlock the Stormbreaker title. So I'm going to try and complete this one to full, I think.
That's cool.
I'm already at 4,000 3 days in, so I should have no problem getting to it.
I mean, I like the Mordeau pet, although having them out is becoming increasingly hard. Yeah, we just have so many that it's hard to, you know, hard to do that. I wish it, instead of it had been Stormbreaker, I wish it was Stormborn, so it could be a Targaryen.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Stormborn. Wouldn't that be cool?
Mm-hmm. But that's pretty much breaking the storm, and I think the biggest part of this is that we got the reveal for now, and for now I mean for the next 20 minutes or so on this podcast, that this is going to be Fossil Island.
Kind of, but
kind
yes.
Of, yeah.
We can call it Fossil Island.
We can call it that, but it might be something else.
It might... It's RS3 Fossil Island.
Yeah. Also, if you talk to Ava at the event, she will have a mini task for you where you can get 500 boat materials. You just run around through the entire area and hunt for, I think, 5 trinket pieces to put together this amulet, and then you'll get 500 boat pieces and some magic XP. So that's another little
thing you can do
there as well.
Nice little bonus.
Mm-hmm. All right, so moving on to that, I think we can move on to the CompCape rework right now, right?
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this CompCape.
This is in large part exactly as it was when we last saw it, so we're not going to spend too much time on the actual design. So to just recap with this here, the whole purpose of the CompCape rework was to set a new guide going forward for what comp and trimmed comp achievements should look like going forward, which really didn't exist in the past. And with this, every significant content update will have at least one new comp requirement and at least one new trimmed requirement. And the only reason requirements won't be added is if that the content is so small there's nothing to create requirements from, like a ninja fix, the nature of the update doesn't lend itself to requirements, like a limited time event, or if there's a strong reason why new requirements shouldn't be added, like they might impact the game economy, or the game would be disrupted in some way, or it might be too dependent on luck. Now, they say that a comp player should represent a player who has played everything, and a player is some comp player, someone you can ask about any update, and they'll be able to tell you about it. No, we don't need Siri for that. But anyways, I think another way that you can learn about every update without being a comp player is just to listen to the Weekly Byte every week at youtube.com/rsbnb. That's another way.
Nice.
Now, when it comes to Trimmed, they say this is should require players to have completed content to whatever extent is possible. And we see, when you see someone Trimmed, they should be someone who has completed everything. So this is like Complete Trekkie, Ivan is Flailing, and Memorialized More Than Once are good examples of Trimmed requirements, and that they go above and beyond and exhaust the update and do everything that they can. And they, of course, mention that 4K Telos isn't something they do because it's too difficult for Trimmed, and they won't do ones that are too grindy, like 200 mil in a skill.
Well, that's good. I don't think 200 mil should be a requirement or anything.
And, you know, in general, I think if you wanted a way to sum up the comp cape rework, aside from the things players are going to get from this to use on their characters, and we're looking at this purely from a game design standpoint, ensuring the health of the game and the end game going forward, it is to set the guidelines of what comp should look like and to allow for new best-in-slot capes to be added with this update. Because right now, prior to this, the comp cape was the best in slot. Now, if you have Reaper, if you've completed Reaper, and you have your Kiln cape, the Kiln cape once again returns to the top as best in slot, combined with Reaper. Which is how it should be.
This is exactly what we talked about. I think we did three different sections on this, essentially. And this is something we talked about, I think, in the beginning, that by removing the passives, putting them on the player, this is going to allow exactly what you said, for there to be new capes and new best-in-slot capes. Yep. And that's essentially what it's done. And it did remove, it removed some of the stuff that was hard for the non-combat people focused from comp, but still retains that for... the combat people can still receive their best in slot, whatever it is from, combat.
So, exactly.
I mean, I think this was the right choice when it comes to that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll get to whether it was the right choice for Trim people later on when we talk about the Halo, but first, you know, changes to the achievements, and this is what I think what caused a lot of grief in the combat community and the Trimmed community, respectively. First, of course, Reaper Crew being removed from the comp cape, and the How Many Games Castle Wars achievement being removed from the Trimmed comp cape.
Yeah, good.
And see, we're not PVMers, so we say good, because Reaper should be its own achievement, yeah. And it can award stats from it, which it does now. And, I mean, if you're a combat person, you're going to have those stats anyway, so nothing changes for you effectively with this. So I think this achievement change is fine. What people were a bit salty about was that you don't need to kill all the bosses now to complete comp.
Yeah, good. Once again, good.
Yeah.
Because look at the definition, like what they're talking about. It says you're supposed to be like experiencing every update. You've done it, you've participated in it, you can explain it, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be so good that you beat every boss at least once. I mean, well, we've just went over it a million times.
Yeah, but, and that's why we're not going to go too much for it.
Right, yeah.
Right now, of course, we've already talked about the being there, done that, achievement being added to comp, and adding on to Trim, Salty, Sandy, EI, EIO, and an updated version of Work on Your Artisan. And these achievements here, the new additions, will have a one-month grace period. And they don't expect this to be the norm with new achievements added in, so people can take note of that.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, I would say that was a gift. You don't have to do the Castle Wars, so...
Yeah, and it was a pretty silly achievement anyways, and we'll talk about that.
It was dumb. Later. It was a boosting achievement. They should have called it what it is, a boosting achievement.
Yeah.
Can you get together with people and log out when they tell you to and log back in? Because that's what you did.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, you've had people get mad at you before in Castle Wars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. been there, done that. But I mean, it's just to me that just reeks of that. Seems like it would be bad design. I mean, right, Shane?
Yep,
like,
it is bad design. It is bad design. It should never have been added in the first place. All right. So let's talk about the passive benefits right now, because this is the biggest part, in my opinion, of this update for everybody involved. Not only people who have comp, but for people who have max. And are you ready for this one?
Okay.
People who do not have a max cape.
Uh-huh.
Now, what this means is that when I logged in this week to RS, I got this wall of messages. Now, they say, with the comp cape reworked, we've moved some of your cape benefits around. Some of the teleports that are on your capes are now teleport abilities. Check your ability book for them. You no longer need to wear your Jared's cape to gain its effect. Skill cape perks have been added to the max cape, will now act as if they're on all capes except skill capes. Your Ava's accumulator and alerter ammunition pickup effect is now passive and doesn't require the accumulator and alerter to be worn. And this was me,
oh, man, for
who has a max cape. And this is everybody. Everybody,
oh,
even
wow.
ones who do not have a max cape. And the benefit of this is I was talking to Earth, who logged in this week, and he was absolutely amazed to see that these benefits that he had, because he's a quester, so he has things like the Ardoian Cloak 4 complete, and he had the Ava's devices complete. He was surprised to see that he can now access these as passives. So passives and perks from the max or 99 skill capes are going to be on your character. The max skill teleport is also available as a teleport. 3 skill cape perks on your cape slot. Those are all always going to be there. Ardoian Cloak 4, I already mentioned. Kandaran Monastery teleport. Manor Farm teleport. Summoning Restore. All task rewards from the Ardoian tasks that required the cape to be worn. Those are on your character. Ava's Alerter, its arrow retrieval effect. Even the Bone Sack Enchanted now has its effect on your character. The Skeletal Horror teleport. Jared's cape. Various thieving bonuses and effects, the spirit cape, and 20% less summoning special energy used when using summoning scrolls. And all of these are added to your character if you've already unlocked them. And this isn't just for comp people. This isn't just for maxed people. This is for everyone.
Yes.
And this is the big part of this update.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, it's a huge part of the update. And I guess I didn't realize just how far reaching that was going to be.
Well, we thought it was just going to be for people who had comp.
Yeah, we thought it would be just for people because, you know, like how the comp cape had the Ava's Alerter hooked on it. I just thought it would be the stuff that was hooked on the comp. But this is like everything. This is all of the passives.
Yeah.
I love it.
And if you go to your magic book and look at your teleport, I have unlocked the Max Guild, the Skeletal Whore, the Kandaran Monastery, and the Manor Farm teleport. So, I mean, even if you don't have the Master Farmer's outfit and you just have the Ardoian 4 outfit, you can just drag that Manor 4 teleport onto your action bar, and there you go. You have a teleport you can use for a farming action bar. But all this stuff is here.
Just takes a little getting used to. I'm so used to my Max Guild telly. Like that was like the telly. That's the one I used like constantly. And you have to get used to not having to right click on that. That Max cape.
And I mean, you can put it on the action bar now and just click.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know, when we got those changes through the action bar, was it last week? I thought, well, we're actually moving to a point to where you could. Begin to make a scaling action bar, which is cool. And now with these teleports, I think that's awesome. I don't know if this will have any effect on the the Ring of the Abyss or the something, the Abyss. Remember the jewelry, the second round of jewelry that came out not too long ago?
Passage of the Abyss.
Passage of the Abyss, yeah. No, I don't
know.
No,
I think because those were largely, those were teleport jewelry pieces, so it should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess, but you should have no problem getting around now.
Yeah. And like these passive benefits is combined with the new design direction for comp should redefine that comp endgame perspective, in my opinion, and I think this is actually the truth, so that it becomes a whole lot more obtainable and a whole lot more feasible for everybody, that it's a stepping stone progression rather than you previously would just complete all these achievements, unlock the comp cape, and you would get all these benefits. Now you have them as you go.
You have them as you go, and I mean, more than anything, this has made the comp cape a viable goal for players like myself, that there's no way I wasn't going to be able to get through Reaper. That's just not.
Yeah.
And that's not, yeah. I mean.
And that's the biggest one, and that's fine.
Well, and there was just certain things like that. There was no way that I could overcome that. And which, I mean, I don't know if that, I never thought that was fair, right? I always thought that if you work hard enough, you should be able to achieve, and that's just not how combat works.
Yes,
you could work every day and still not achieve. And now I feel like it's more
achievable.
You can work and earn it.
It's more clearly defined, and you know what's going to be expected of you. Which I think, you know, barring the people's feelings who are still hurt over this, I think this makes the comp cape rework a success.
I think so too, and I wish I would have stuck to my guns better on that one, because I mean, I'm not gonna lie, Parnassius was very convincing when he was on, and I started to kind of, you know, I kind of saw that side of things. I'm like, well, it'll, yeah, you know, I could be cool with it going in this complex way and everything, but you know, all along, I thought we were going to get something simple.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah. And it's Mod Jack.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I knew it was going to be good, but I just didn't know how. Yeah.
All right. So aside from passives and effectively cleaning those up, the next thing that wasn't really mentioned in this news posting and everybody really should know about is that the Ranged Cape now has a new perk on it, as its previous perk was the Avis perk. Its new perk is that it increases the special effect chance of ranged ammunition from triggering off by 20% of its current chance.
Oh, well, that's great. That'll work with the Bat Criminal bolts and, oh yeah, that's a good one. Good
really
job.
Good one. Really good one.
Yeah.
So, and you know, there's really no talk about this with the comp cape rework. It just kind of came in, and I think this is a good decision all around.
Yeah, it's right under the radar. So, you know, I think David had mentioned it, that if the weapons diversity were to go forward the way it is, ranged will be giving magic an actual run for its money for the style to use.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. We already talked about the teleports. Reaper. You know, Reaper crew, kill all the bosses. 200 HP, an extra 20 armor, 2 prayer, 12 melee ranged and strength bonus. Adds on with any other cape that you have. And this, of course, effectively makes the kiln capes the best in slot capes once again in game. Which is how it should be. Best in slot cape coming from a combat activity. That's good. Next up with this, cosmetics. If you had the previous comp cape or trimmed comp cape, you'll have these on login. But if you don't have them, you are completing comp or trim for the first time, you just head on over to the Varrock Museum to claim them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Now the profound halo.
Ready for this?
And this is perhaps one of the big sticking points left in this one, rework is that this is for people who completed the Castle Wars achievement, or rather had trim before. And, you know, I actually took to Twitter to gauge some opinion on this. And I went back to an old friend of the podcast for this, Raji, who helped us with our bot coverage back in the day when the bot epidemic was happening. And the discussion I had with him effectively boiled down to the fact that the trimmed comp grind should be daunting, but with every a new requirement for every update, that could get a bit annoying over time. And when you look back at that Castle Wars achievement in particular, that should not have been added because that was just bad game design. And
yeah,
he was number 15 to get the trimmed comp cape.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't play RS3 anymore, so he doesn't know exactly how the direction of the game feels today in regards to comp end game and the need for a best-in-slot cape mechanism. But I did ask him about that, and he said if that is indeed the way it is and they need to add some new best-in-slot capes, it makes sense to kind of separate the passives and have the cape slot be just the cape slot again. And he even went on further to say with this, when you add in something like the Castle Wars requirement, it just shouldn't have been there to begin with. But at the end of the day, when you actually remove it, you make people angry. And what it does is it creates a sense that if we're going to, you know, put this much time in for this achievement and you're just going to remove it all these years later, why would I even bother investing time into something so daunting, right? So that's the point with that one. And when it comes down to it at the end of the day, he also feels that the Profound Halo should be actually for people who completed the Castle Wars achievement, not necessarily the ones who had trim or completed the original.
Yeah, I mean, that
the original 5,000 games, not the revamped one.
What was the revamped one?
They revamped it to get 5,000 tokens, so you could do it in, you know, less than 5,000 games. But the previous one was, the original version of it was 5,000 Castle Wars games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. And I mean, I think if I would have spent this much time on completing the Castle Wars achievement, either variant of it, and getting a cosmetic halo with the options that are available in this poll, I wouldn't be too pleased right now.
Well, I mean, look, this is the turd in the punch bowl, right? I mean, it. But I'm really torn on it just because I don't feel like anyone that gets this achievement, it's an AFK achievement because you didn't play. No one played to get those 5,000 games,
and that's what it's devolved into.
Yeah, so you know, I don't know. See, my problem is I hate to shoot something down if I can't come up with a better idea myself, and I really can't think of a better idea myself. They made it a cosmetic halo, and I think that's really all you can do. But if I put myself in the shoes of someone else, yeah, I'd probably be, you know, I'd probably be a little ticked. But every one of the players knows if you're honest about it, you were AFK that whole time. So, you know,
and
I don't
suspect,
know.
Though, in the beginning, there were people who didn't do it AFK.
I mean, maybe, but I find it hard to believe that they're still playing. I mean, that would have been like, what, 2011? 7? 11? 11?
Yeah.
It was that recent?
Yeah.
How on earth did I miss that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Castle Wars came in 2011.
Oh, no. That's when I thought you were asking when the comp cape came in.
No,
Castle Wars is 06.
Okay.
Castle Wars was 06. Sorry, we had a bit of a miscommunication there.
Right, but then the comp requirement then the
was
term 2011. Comp didn't come into 11?
Yeah.
2011.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, crap. Castle Wars was 04.
Well, then it had a good run.
It did.
I mean, that's just the nature of an MMO, right? And I know it's not that way with RuneScape necessarily, but with a lot of other MMOs, right? At one time or another, a certain class or certain race or certain abilities are the best. And the next patch that comes in might make something else the
best. Too bad, so sad.
And you gotta, you gotta roll with the, you know what I mean? You kind of gotta be adaptive and roll with the punches when it comes to that kind of stuff.
And in general, because of that, I think RuneScape is very accessible in that it allows people to continue to have it their way for so long.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And RuneScape's very much, I feel like it really, I know players don't think this, but I think they really do try to cater to the players a lot more than other companies do, because they just don't care.
Yeah.
They do what they're going to do.
And, I mean, I don't know what else you could do aside from the Profound Halo. A cosmetic. Because you don't want to add in something that's too powerful, right?
Well, and see, and that's exactly where I came. And, you know, it's like, do I like this? Not really, but I don't have a better solution, so I can't cut it down too much.
Yeah. Also, another gentleman I talked with on Twitter said that you know, previously he's had a comp cape since 2014, but now with the Castle Wars requirement removed from trim is effectively now just a to-do list, and it's not painful because it's not going to be this huge grind. So he's actually going to go for trim now. So it's having its desired effect.
Yeah, that's good. And that's what it should be. It should be a huge to-do list, right? I mean, I don't know. I feel like this was the best possible outcome. I really do.
It was also the simplest design, and the only real hurt to the combat people is that they can't say, oh, you need a comp cape now to come with us on this run.
Yeah, boo-hoo.
Yeah, boo-hoo.
They didn't get hurt by it. No, that's the thing. What makes a really, really good update? Well, it didn't really hurt anybody. It only made things better. I mean, the
and
only person
a,
you can say
just
that...
There's a few hurt feelings along the way with the trimmed and the Castle Wars
people. Yes. I mean, Castle Wars is some hurt feelings. I get it, but I just feel like it's different. If you played 5,000 Castle Wars games, yes, you have every right to be salty. But if you did what 90% of people out there do, then you can get over it.
Yeah. Because recall that with Castle Wars, you get 2 tokens for a win, 1 for a draw, and 0 for a loss. So as a result of that, if you won 2,500 games, you could half the original achievement after they reworked it.
Right.
So
they should have just pulled it then.
Yeah. And, I mean, the Reaper people can also be pleased as well because they get their Reaper crew. But if they combine that with a Kiln Cape, now they got even something that's even better than what the comp was before. So...
Oh yeah, and they can, and it's very specific. So only big badasses get to have their Reaper and their combat stuff. So
yeah,
yeah, you know.
All right, I think that's pretty much enough on the comp cape rework. As we said, we already talked about the design, and we covered the biggest and the most important part, of course, being the passives. So I'm pleased with that. Also this week, the Elite Woodcutting Outfit has come into game. And as I mentioned, the best way I found to gather these fragments is to just sit there at the Breaking the Storm event and cut wood. I've got over 10,000 of them in, you know, just under 3 hours work this week there. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good rate.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy that these outfits are coming in like this. Like, I really appreciate that. And I'm glad that they're coming in through invention and everything.
Yeah. Elfiers are also here. You can pick these up in the Solomon's General Store.
I'm actually excited about this.
Yeah, the only downside, and Sirion tested this, is that you can't combine them with other things like sunglasses because they're head item overrides.
I kind of figured that was going to be the case, but before, if you wanted like Elfiers, it was like a whole head thing.
Yeah.
So this will be cool to be able to have your elf ears and just have ears. I might actually have to bring out the old half elf again.
Yeah, and there's 5 variants of them that when you purchase these, so
alright.
And you get them all for 315 rune coins. I don't know. I mean, You give up also.
You're not a,
cosmetic
guy.
No, but I mean, you give up a hat too, you know. So I mean, if you really wanted to do that, you'd be giving up a hat slot.
Well, it's only if you're really into like elven stuff, and
You should pick them up and see how they combine with the sniper suit.
That was exactly my thought. That was exactly what I had been thinking, yeah. I told Brew, I was like, I'm going to get the old sniper outfit out, see how this works.
Alrighty, well, moving on from the main update from the week, there really wasn't too much of the patch notes this week. The pocket slot on the action bar now correctly updates the item name when a new item is equipped there. When the entire pocket slot is one of your keybound actions, activating a worn passage of the abyss no longer unequips it instead of opening the teleport menu, which is what people would want. And newly converted motherload maw enhancers will no longer be missing a charge, which was a big issue last week.
Yeah. Good.
Okie dokie. They also did put out a blog on account security in terms of things that are being improved and worked on. And this is also very important for everybody to listen to. So, I'm going to say that this might almost be as important or maybe even more important than what we just talked about. So, Jagex is working on a number of things, including strengthening passwords and providing breached password usage warnings by partnering with a third-party company to scan databases of passwords that have been effectively stolen so they can say that, oh, this password has been stolen somewhere. Don't use it.
Oh, that's good.
They're also working on adding support for complex passwords so you can add symbols and whatnot to your passwords as well, because right now you can't do that in RuneScape, believe it or not.
You got to get creative.
They also say that coming soon, there's going to be email notifications and validations for account behavior changes, which is something everybody does. Authenticator checks on the website. So when you log into the account section on the website, you're going to have to enter in your authenticator, which makes absolute sense. Because if someone gets your RuneScape password, all they need to do is go onto the website and disable authenticator to get into your account.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be investigating if they should implement an authenticator delay, which, I mean, is something like the bank PIN delay where you can't shut down your bank PIN for 7 days or something along the tune of that. So, and I think I want to just take a moment here and talk about passwords in general and how passwords can save you from, you know, being caught in too much pain, because when it comes down to it, you want to have a password that is strong. And I think most people in this day and age are probably somewhat aware that you can get hacked by having insecure passwords. And this isn't something people thought of when RuneScape first came around. So what they want to do with this is confirm that you're the owner of an account by using the email address your account is registered to, and they're going to send notifications to your email address if they see strange changes in account security. And with this, they want to put an increased factor on two-factor authentication, namely Google Authenticator. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, where you can actually set up Google Authenticator without a smartphone, but the smartphone is the best way to go. And they say that they already offer two-factor authentication, but it is only used by 50% of the active players.
Are you kidding me? Only 50% uses Authenticator?
Yep.
Well, that's your problem. I mean, that's your problem right there.
And What you're hearing right there is just me being speechless, because, I mean, it's this certain naivety that's associated with RuneScape players that I've discovered in the past, where people say that, oh, I'm not going to use the authenticator because it needs to be on my smartphone. I don't want that extra level of hassle. Then they complain later on about getting hacked.
I don't know. I just don't know why you wouldn't. There's no reason not to. I mean, when it came out, I signed up immediately.
I love two-factor authentication, and it's something that definitely people should be paying attention to, because without it, I don't know where your security's at, right? So,
well, if you don't have Authenticator, do not stand in the GE and ask me for money because you got hacked. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'll just point everybody to this weekly bite that we did about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, about enabling the Authenticator without a smartphone. It's something that everybody should pay attention to with this, so much so that if you have Windows and you're not using Authenticator, just enable it using this method that we're outlining here. It's plain and simple and straightforward. But if you have a smartphone, do that as well, because it's just more convenient and you're always going to have it with you. And use a password that has, right now, letters and numbers in it. And when Jagex supports it, add some special characters to it as well. And don't use your passwords anywhere else. And I think that's the best way of showcasing how you could be secure with your RuneScape account. That's what people can do right now to ensure that they don't get hacked. It's simple. Really simple. So, other things that they talked about were combating account takeovers, because with that, you know, people have their email account hijacked, and with that, ooh, I now control your RuneScape account. So, with this, what they want to do is they want to kind of use the same kind of technology that they use to tackle payment fraud. And what they're going to be doing with this is looking at real-time security models for RuneScape accounts, in terms of looking at domains where the logins come from, countries where they come in from, maybe times, and see if that, oh, maybe this is a reason we should raise an alert, kind of similar to how Visa combats fraud with credit cards as well. And I mean, when you're dealing with a company that has as many millions of accounts as Jagex does, this is probably something you want to do as well. Just, hey, was this you logging in?
Yeah, that's great.
And then recovery abuse, which they talk about, where, you know, people have have a fraudulent account recovery attempt set in, and they want to identify if that request has been actually submitted by the account owner. And they want to, within the next year, bring the focus on stopping hijackers before they even get to an account. But regardless, they need to improve account recovery attempts. And this may mean that appeal information requirements become stricter. And it's going to take some time to find the right balance, to say, between safety and swiftly getting players back into the game. And they admit that they don't have it quite right now. So they are going to continue working on this.
Well, that's good. But you know what? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So get your Authenticator going.
Yeah. I wonder how many players of RuneScape don't actually have a smartphone.
I don't know. I was sitting here thinking, like, 50% is a lot. Like, I wonder, because at first I was like, oh, I bet that's everyone's second, third, or fourth account that they're not putting Authenticator on. And I'm like, 50% is a lot, though. That's a big chunk.
Yeah. Another thing is don't use the same password as your email account. But I already said that. Don't use the same password anywhere on the internet. And, you know, one thing that can actually help you with this is picking up a password manager like LastPass or 1Password. If you're on the Mac and iOS, these effectively allow you to keep and remember one large master password, and then have a different password for every website that you go to. I'm a fan of 1Password because I'm primarily on the Mac side, but LastPass is also really good for this and has mobile apps as well. So those are things you can look into if you're wanting to just strengthen your security just a wee bit. All right. Should we move on to the next big thing? And that is, of course, the lore special about the land at a time.
The lore without the lore?
Yeah, there really wasn't much lore in this one, I found. But that's all right, because we do have a number of things that we could pull up from within this video. So the first thing that people will conveniently note in this video is that there's a recap of events that took place in Desperate Times, and they say that Mr. Mordeau will be joining this expedition, which isn't something we initially knew, but makes sense now that we know that Karapak is involved as a dragonkin, and Mr. Mordeau being a failed experiment, and Mr. Mordeau, of course, calling it Fossil Island. And keep that in your mind. We're about to get to the jumping off point for that in just a bit. But Lanikea, the new Slayer Master, originally was from the east but headed west. And when she reached the human kingdom, she started studying with the Slayer Masters, and she prefers poison to kill her enemies. That should be – that's a hint for everybody that poison's going to play a role on these on this island with the creatures there. So just remember that.
That does make sense, yeah.
Also, Irwinson arrived shortly after Karapak and witnessed something that made him damage. So they say he's the closest that there is to a local guide. He got there just after Karapak. And I guess we're going to find out what they mean exactly by damage. So that was a little bit interesting. But where this video actually turned it up to 11, in my opinion, was where they said the storm walls effectively block any attempt to tell what's happening on the island. And the island is so far north, north of Damonheim, that it could be nothing but a blasted, icy wasteland. Surely nothing can live in such a place, and any native life must be long dead, reduced to fossils.
Hmm. But he has a needle. Right, Karapak has a needle.
Yes, Karapak has the needle.
And he went to this island.
And he went to this island.
And wasn't this island referred to as, like, the first place? So maybe, like, the first place that had life on Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, it was. That's what he called it, effectively, the first place. Now, what does the needle do, Tanis?
It helps you manipulate time. Okay. Go back in time.
And this is something that Sirion came up with this week in terms of a theory. And that is that what we're seeing, because what we're obviously seeing in these behind-the-scenes videos is that there is indeed life there. What we're seeing is going to be Fossil Island in the past as a result of the needle. Hence the name, the Land Out of Time, and Anachronia. And if you break up the word Anachronia, what that means is pre-time or before time.
I think we have our answer.
Now, we know that Fossil Island on Old School RuneScape is, of course, a dead area. If you look at the map of Fossil Island on the Old School world map, you'll see lots of volcanic death there and effectively not a very hospitable environment. And that's what everybody's expecting to meet here. But if you look at this video, it is very much alive.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. I mean, just watching the videos.
So,
I expected a jungle with dinosaurs.
And that's the working theory on this, is that as a result of the needle, we are going to be witnessing Fossil Island in the past, where Karapak will be doing something to it.
Yeah, I wonder what Karapak, if he's trying to, like, if there's something to do with wiping out the first life, would put an end to everything from then on. Like,
that might be it, because that's what he wanted to do. If he can wipe out the first life,
right,
the dragonkin, because that's what he said. His whole goal was to wipe out life on Gyllenhaal as a sacrifice to the elder gods. And if he can do it in the past, we're not going to be a problem here in the future. So I think we have our answer by combination of Sirion looking at the data and this cryptic message in the behind-the-scenes video, lore video this week, saying that it should be a blasted icy wasteland when it's clearly not. And Anachronia, out of time. If you're out of time, it effectively means that you're not from the time you're at. So there we are. We're time traveling to the past, everyone.
I wonder if this is going to turn into a loop. Since
I hope not.
Everything is dead. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I hope not either, but it's a possibility.
I think we have the best working theory here as a confluence of everything RSB and B update. So, All right. I think we can move on to the live stream right now from this week.
Okay.
Now, they did talk a bit about what was going to be arriving this summer. And, you know, in particular, they said as a result of this, players weren't interacting with the beach how they wanted. So there's no beach this year. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the beach. Did you?
Yeah. I mean, now that it's gone, it's kind of sad. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think everyone just took it for granted. We were always going to have a beach. It was always the summer thing. And
yeah. I agree.
No beach. The beach will be back next year. Watch.
Yeah, probably. They'll probably rework it and something else will come back with it.
Yeah.
They also did mention that the comp cape rework, the max and comp capes, will have 100 life points added onto it just so that it is equal to how it was before. That was unintended. And Mod Jack's summarization of how the comp cape rework went down is that it's primarily an update for game health. And his exact words were, everybody got something and most people lost something in exchange.
Well, if that ain't the quintessential update, I don't know what it is.
Exactly, exactly.
Right? So. I mean, that is the definition of compromise.
Yeah. All right. But anyways, the main point of this live stream was to showcase the art and audio of the Land Out of Time. And they did have a number of these so-called mood sketches that were happening on this live stream, showcasing what the island was going to look like and how it initially started as a concept to just make an island. But at the end, they did settle on the idea of the Land Out of Time, because what they thought of was, let's just build an island with different biomes and environments. And then they later applied the lore to it. And that's what they wound up with. They also showed, in addition to concept art, they did show a number of screenshots in-game, and these screenshots are absolutely stunning as to what the in-game engine can now do for this. And, you know, it should put to rest any thought out there from anybody that RuneScape needs a new engine for their next-generation game, so to speak, when you see exactly what it looks like here for this. So,
The engine's fine. You just have to give it gas.
Exactly. And for anybody wanting to see this, I'm just going through some of these screenshots on the YouTube version right now. So if you want to flip over to that at youtube.com/rsbnb, you can. And they also showed off some of the Slayer creatures for this one, and in particular, the scale for these, proving that it is not a barren wasteland. And, you know, these Slayer creatures are about 2 to 3 times as tall as the player.
They're going to be serious. I mean, they've said they're going to hit hard, and I bet that they do. I'm looking forward to them, because it sounds like what I want out of a Slayer creature, which is something that's challenging, but not all about
something
the mechanics.
Something that's not
going to
kick your teeth in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind if something hits hard. That, okay, I can figure that out. You can spank and tank or what, however you want to do it. But I just didn't want something where I had to do the RuneScape 2 step again. And you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want it to be a mini boss. I just want it to be a Slayer creature. That's tougher, you know, scaled to fit my level kind of thing.
Yeah. They also did say that they are playing with a lot of geometry on this one, in that there's lots of vertical shift in the map, which is something they really haven't done before. And this is an exercise for the art team to push the engine as far as it can go, and we're definitely seeing that. So this is going to be a Lost Grove, effectively version 2 in terms of graphical wowness, let's just say.
And I bet that verticality is going to come in on the agility course majorly.
Yep. All right, now I want to get to the part of this live stream that I was very, very pleased about when I was going through this, the sound design of this update. Oh my god, let's have a listen to some of these right now. First, a couple of sound effects: a dinosaur dying.
Damn sure I'm talking all the time. So.
That sounds like a dinosaur dying.
Awesome.
It almost sounds like it's directly out of Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next one is a dinosaur walking.
Walking.
that makes sense. And, you know, once again, very, very clear callback to Jurassic Park, I think, without being a blatant ripoff of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with this, they actually went on location to do sound recording in Norfolk, England. They captured things such as water washing up against the beach, flamingos, parrots, and geese. And also Maud Slippers and Maud Surma turned it into a mini vacation. And, you know, they spent a good deal of time actually on this live stream showing off vacation photos. Including
I didn't know
camping
there were flamingos. There are flamingos in the UK?
I mean, that's what they said. I don't know.
Was it at a zoo?
Oh, yeah, right. They did go to a zoo as well.
Oh, okay. I was like, what?
Good point. And they showed pictures of their tent. They showed pictures of the flamingos. They showed pictures of the coast, pictures of the parrots. And capturing the water washing up against the beach, and they had to get up early to record all these things and whatnot. And it shows, you know, just the level that they're going to for audio design in RuneScape at this point. And they add all these sounds into a general sound library, and that makes RuneScape what it is. But I think the biggest thing that came from this was the Land Out of Time theme, and I actually want to share a bit of that right now. In the show, so let's just have a listen to what they called the Land Out of Time theme.
A little bit about it.
Mm-hmm. What does that give you vibes of?
Well, several things, actually. There's Fremenic elements to it, I think, with the drums and the way that you feel like you're setting sail. But it also, once again, hints back to the Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
How the music, like, it, you're entering this, you're discovering
a sense of wonder.
Beautiful. Yes, it's that sense of wonder. But it also kept this little RuneScape-y kind of thread through it that reminded me of first logging in.
Yeah.
So it really captured all of that.
And this is a modern RuneScape 3 update, everyone. I mean, you got the graphics, you got the sound, you got the lore. And this is the branding I've been talking about that Jagex needs to bring forward more and talk about more with the community is that this is RuneScape 3. Let it be known to the world that you're doing this, you know, because it seems like we launch these big updates every year like this, but they don't get any kind of coverage in the gaming media, like when, say, Stowe or World of Warcraft launches a new expansion.
Yes. And these are the updates that differentiate RS3 from OS.
Yep.
This is like what makes RS3 what it is.
It's the headlining game that is pushing the lore forward.
And it's easy to forget that at times until an update like this drops and you're like, well, it hasn't dropped yet, but going to drop, and you're going, oh, wow, that's right. That's why I play RS3. I forgot.
Yeah.
You know, I almost forgot for a minute.
Well, we got one more, actually two more on this. The next one is Lanikea's theme, the Slayer Master, and this one is very different from the first one. Thank you.
And that's the and that is Lanyard.
Wow. And in that one, you got the same sense of wonder. It's a little bit more. It's got a bit more drums in it to convey the Slayer combat sense, but you can also hear a sense of sadness too in the Slayer Master being isolated.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. I thought it'd feel more like Eastern Landish because that's where she's from, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I got a real like seductress assassin kind of
yeah. That's a good way of describing it. And when you're dealing with poison, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
So, and then the final one is the agility theme. And once again, you got that same sense of wonder there, kind of similar kind of callbacks, I think, to that Jurassic Park franchise, but also very upbeat and something I think that conveys the sense of what agility is. You're trying to move around fast and trying to skip over obstacles and whatnot.
You almost can see someone like climbing, like jumping and climbing.
Yeah.
But my prediction is, like, on day one, since that, you know, you can go forwards or backwards, it's going to be, like, this just cluster of players, and you probably could take that out and put in the chicken dance, and it would look more appropriate for day one.
And, you know, I think the thing, going back to what we said after the first Land Out of Time theme, is that this is all coalescing around a central feeling of each track that we've heard, and there's going to be more than these three. And this is just the branding of RS3, all of this combined together. And this is something that needs to be talked about so much more. And I'm begging the Patreon supporters at some month, please let us talk about the RuneScape 3 soundtrack 1 month. I would love it if we could do that for a monthly bit. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. The Land Out of Time is going to make a perfect addition to the RuneScape soundtrack.
Definitely. It's so... The sound of this game, where it came from to where it is one of the most impressive things that there is. I mean, when you think back to that, I don't even know what you would have called it, but I mean, the first load screen I ever saw in that first theme.
Escape Main.
Yeah, and where it's at now, it's just so good.
And the reason for that is they were space constrained, so they had to do it with MIDI. And every computer, of course, has the ability to synthesize basic notes, and that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it made sense.
Day, and it is part of the charm as to how we got to where we are right now from that point. And, you know, the Land Out of Time just continues that trend. And, you know, I think if there's one update we're going to think of this year for audio, it's probably going to be this one.
I think so, and it can just set a mood in a game. So, like, I don't know if as RS players we really realize that as much, because a lot of people play with their sound down or they're listening to music. But the music in a game can set a mood that, and you don't even realize it's doing it. Like sometimes, like if it's doing it well, you might not even pick up on it, like consciously, but subconsciously, it's you've got this feeling, you know, if you're in a dark or dangerous place, or you're somewhere like this and it's all upbeat, and it, or it's somewhere, it's something that I'm probably most impressed with.
Yeah.
In this update, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I came away with last year after the presentation at RuneFest as well. So I think we can move on to questions right now. But before we do that, I'll just, of course, want to give thanks to our wonderful Patreon supporters this week. You guys, of course, truly do enable us to do impressive things with the show. And we are ever so thankful for everyone's contributions. But in particular, this week, I'd like to give thanks to Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Darren L, Diana, Kyle, Logan H, So Juiced a Devil, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support of this podcast. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, you can head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb to learn more. And there we detail what exactly we're doing. We're currently doing 3 tiers of bonuses. First and foremost is the monthly bit, which we're going to be recording next week on the topic of hype and anticipation in RuneScape. These are released exclusively to the Patreon community. We're also doing Inside RSBNB Update at the end of the month, which is an inside look at RSBNB Update, which could include interviews with our hosts and production team, learning how the podcast comes together, and maybe having a sneak peek at where our hosts record the show. Then last weekend, we had a great time with our very first round table, effectively a discussion about anything and everything RuneScape related. These are recorded and published to Patreon supporters, and Patreon supporters are also encouraged to join in the roundtable for discussions. And should we reach $99 a month, and our next goal, we'll have movie night every month in the RSBNB Discord. Movies will probably include some Star Trek along the way. And if you want to support us, you can do that for as little as $1 a month. You can, with that, you get early access to our show notes, a mention in the show notes, and the ability to join our roundtable discussions. You can also vote for topics, including the monthly bit, which was chosen last week, and we're in the middle of producing that one right now. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, which you'll definitely want this week, given we were showcasing music. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out every week and exclusive access that we use, or exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to record the clip show at the end of the year. And once again, thank you to everybody who supports us on Patreon and enables us to do what we're doing today. So thank you very much.
Yes, thanks, guys. I can't wait to see you at the next roundtable. It's a lot of fun to get to talk to our Patreons.
Yeah, it was. We went everywhere with that one. I mean, we talked about farming, and we talked about the land out of time. We talked about lore. It was great. All right, so we got one question this week from Kyle. He says, Shane and Tanis, as a question for the next podcast, do you think that Mod Shawnee should just do all the communications? It seems like that website responds better to him than others. Just a thought. Sorry I missed the round table on Saturday. I'm looking forward to the next one. You know, I think we also need to give a shout out to Mod Porky on this. He has been also very invaluable in the community in terms of doing the job of community manager and interfacing with the community and smoothing out rough spots when they arise. So that team of community managers, Mod Shawnee, Mod Porky, you guys do a great job. And I'm sure there's others behind the scenes who are not as aware of. But, you know, I'm going to say this, and I think that this might be something that might be seen as a bit of a knee-jerk reaction from most of the J-Mods, but I think that the best course of action to dealing with that website would just be for J-Mods not to use it. Use their forums and personal Twitters only. And then let the players surface the relevant data that appears there. Because, you know, we've had so many situations in the past where JMod goes out there on a Saturday and posts something, and they've talked about this before in community management blogs and streams and whatnot, where if a JMod posts something on Reddit, it becomes the golden word, right? When that might not necessarily be true, and it might just be their own personal opinion. And, you know, I think the problem with this in general is that we started off with such a closed RuneScape community, you know, prior to probably 2009, that it opened up a lot. And it opened up to the point where players were deciding what updates were going to be happening. And that, I think, created a culture where the players want to be involved and they demand to be involved in the decisions. And you and I have both seen other MMOs, you know, other games. The amount of involvement that the players get in the direction RuneScape goes is truly astounding.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I think RuneScape is very sensitive to its players. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, you might want to rag on them, but if you really think deep down, like, they're very sensitive to players. Look, if we have to have a representative for that place, I think Machani is a person that they seem to respect, and he's a wonderful communicator, right? Like, he's just got a way of telling people like what's going on. There's an amount of trust that he's earned since he's been there that players seem to trust him, and that's good. And Mod Porky as well. But I tend to agree with you, Shane. I don't think they ever really should have started using that as heavily as they should have. I thought big announcements should have been coming either. Well, I think big announcements like that should have been coming through the website and the forums. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. And the Twitter, I just think, should be like, that's their personal kind of opinions. It's what they think. It's their, you know, I mean, that's where you might, I mean, it's Twitter, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I mean, I'm sure we'll talk more about this next week, but, not every developer should probably be on stream. There should be a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
And that's the biggest thing. And this is once again, a large hint in the monthly bit that's coming up next week. Is that when you're dealing with these sensitive communications topics, it's not so much what's being said and what the end goal of what's being said is. It's all in the delivery, in that if you are to word something in one way and then you have someone else worded it something differently, the same person is going to get a completely different response from it. And, you know, it's good that they have stopped doing most of the live streams where they talk about future updates, right, or lore, because those were just cans of worms that were waiting to be opened and you couldn't shut. And we've been long saying on the show that the best kind of live streams to do, and perhaps the only live streams they should do aside from the occasional Q&A, are these content showcases where they're showing off art or audio or in-game footage.
Right, of something that is like Almost done.
Because I'm going to use the CompCape rework as this example here. You know, had we not had that live stream where they were talking about the CompCape rework and they showed that entire grid of all those potential cape designs where you could recolor your CompCape, you could have all the different milestone and meta capes along the way, had we not had that live stream, I think people wouldn't have been set on the more complicated CompCape rework, because remember on when we watched that live stream, I said this is an update that if it goes ahead, people are going to be excited about it and it's going to be successful. And the reason for that, one of the best ways to convince people aside from fear about something is an impressive visual.
Oh, that's so true. But yes, that's when I changed, really. I mean, that's when I was like, okay, I think this will be fine. I thought they looked really good. I tend to not be as motivated out of fear, but
But it's an easy way to
motivator to, I mean, at least
motivate,
for
right,
I mean, that's 50% of the population right there. That is what they respond to.
Yeah. And that's in large part when you look at the Reddit for the CompCape rework. There's the fear about, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. People are getting shafted, you know, that kind of thing, right? But
yeah.
So And, you know, this isn't necessarily to say that live streams are bad. It's just that there needs to be a consistent message going in and a consistent theme for it, in that this is the message we're trying to get out. Everything we say in this live stream is going to be supporting that message. How can we get that forward? What are the best JMods to have on? What pictures are we going to show? What are we going to say isn't happening? And what are we going to, you know, refute with picture evidence this week, so to speak, right?
So. Right. And I mean, and look, being on camera like that is, it's something you learn how to do. It's yeah. Mod Shani, you know, we all watched him stream and we kind of got to know him. We know how to take him when he says certain things. And I'm sure they do amongst themselves, you know, but someone like just a viewer might not know how to take a certain dev sarcasm or a joke or something like that.
Or Podchak's directness is another example.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that is that's a good one. That is a good one. And you know, and you take that and run with it, and I don't necessarily.
And there's nothing
think that's
wrong
helpful.
With being direct. There's lots of direct people. I'm a very direct person. If you talk to me, I'll tell you exactly what I'm thinking and what needs to happen. And yeah, Podchak does the same thing. And lots of people see that as an affront because they're hearing stuff they don't like to hear. So, and one final thing on this. What is the last memorable moment on any live stream that you can remember? And I want people to think about this going forward. It's hard, right?
I mean, for some reason, I do remember Ronan and the last Land Before Time stream, but I can't remember why that sticks out. I just, he did something. I don't, but nothing. Yeah, nothing like. Yeah, nothing like the big ones that stand out. You know, like Mott getting booted or off of. Yeah. Band or yeah. You know, like that kind
and
of
if you want,
stuff.
And if you want to know what we're going to be talking about in the monthly bit and why I asked this question, and I don't know if anybody else is having difficulty remembering, but we'll talk about why exactly that's a thing and why that and correcting is a problem and why correcting that problem is one of the biggest things Jagex could do to make their live streams more effective. And that's in the monthly bit. Mic drop.
Boom.
If you guys want to send your own questions in, email questions@rsbnb.com, call or text 571-57BNB. Yeah, we still take text messages there, but, you know, Twitter's easier. So just DM us or mention us on Twitter @rsbnb. Moving on to tech news this week. Speaking of big announcements, Apple announced this today, actually, not this week, but today, that design chief Johnny Ive is going to be leaving Apple and starting his own company, where Apple will be a primary client. And in a statement from Tim Cook, he said that Johnny is a singular figure in the design world and his role in Apple's revival cannot be overstated. From 1998's groundbreaking iMac to the iPhone and the unprecedented ambition of Apple Park, where he has recently been putting so much of his energy and care, Apple will continue to benefit from Johnny's talents by working with him directly on exclusive projects through the ongoing work of the brilliant and passionate design team that he has built. So, wow.
Sad to see him. I mean, for a long time, when I thought of Apple, you would think of Steve and Wise. And Johnny.
Yeah.
Like those were the, you know what I mean? Like those,
the three,
that's
Steve Jobs, Boz, and yeah. Johnny Ive. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be really, I don't know if it'll be the same.
Like the 1998 iMac, every other computer Apple has designed since, that 1998 iMac brought Apple from the edge of death to where they are today.
Well, it definitely started their comeback, but I remember like he had a huge role in the iPods and then iPhones,
yeah,
and their design, and Think about how that revolution. I mean, wow. One revolutionized the way we do music, and the other one is the way that we use a phone. Those are two. Like, is there anything like more common, you know, like in your house or what you do? Like, those things are just something as ubiquitous with living in the 21st century.
Oh.
And he designed it.
Oh, I just, you know, in looking at this tech news, I just found an iPhone case that makes your iPhone look the same color as that iMac from 1998.
Oh, that's cool.
Ooh, I might have to get one of those. And one thing we were talking about is that, you know, yeah, they say he's going to be a Apple will be a primary client of his, but, you know, this just moves Apple to being a run-of-the-mill tech company. And what groundbreaking new product has Apple had since the iPad? Like the watch is there, but it's just there.
Right, but it has. And here's the thing: like, are they going to be able to still sell their products at such a premium without having that special design, that special care with? The way they've always done stuff.
We'll have to wait and see if they continue with their current design trajectory and if there's any radical shifts in that. You know, I follow the Apple news and industry quite well, and it's largely expected that this year's iPhones will just be another incremental update, marking the second year in a row that's happened, last year with the XS and this year again. But, you know, I think one thing that they're looking at for the year after that is they're actually looking at making, once again, a smaller iPhone, which people have been telling them to do since they discontinued the iPhone SE. So, I mean, I think Apple needs to get back to what made it the company that it is. And, you know, that's providing that roundabout entire experience. And I talked about this last week. I suffered a hard drive failure and I'm, you know, futzing around in the middle of my Windows computer. And sure, I can do that, but I just like having a solution I can turn on and I don't need to worry about it and it will work. Like my last iMac, my last computer I had ran for 7 years without a hitch from Apple. 7 years. And my iPhone 8 Plus is, I still maintain, the best iPhone Apple ever made. So that's where I'm at with that. And, you know, his departure signifies, I think, a change for the company. I'm going to go out on the limb and say that after the 2020 iPhones, we're going to see probably Tim Cook leave the company in 2021. If the iPhone market doesn't shoot up to where it was previously. So,
well,
because they are transitioning to a service based company, their cloud services and whatnot, and you don't get much glamour for that in this day and age. So, Tim Cook has done his job. He took over from Steve Jobs. He brought in record amounts of profit, kept the company going, and it's up to someone else to, I think, chart a new path forward. And we're seeing this with the departure of Johnny Ive. And we've been saying that for a long time, that Apple kind of feels rudderless right now.
Yeah. Well, and it may be a different company that fulfills that role. I mean, who knows?
Google.
Yeah, kind of. If there was one to step in, it would probably be that one.
Yeah, because, you know, the design of the Pixel 3 and the fact that they're putting out a cheaper phone, the Pixel 3a, and they're doing both these phones with one singular camera lens. And Apple's going to a multi-lens array, though Google is doing that now. And they are just providing that entire software experience from the hardware all the way up to the Google software. That's what Apple used to do. And if Google can do it for cheaper and provide an experience that people enjoy, they might be able to take that, at least in the mobile market. But we'll have to wait and see what Apple does this year, next year, I think.
You know, but I think even more importantly, though, is Google has been doing something that Apple was always known for, which was trying to make something that doesn't exist. Like,
and that was the vanilla Android phone.
Yeah. I mean, even their failures, at least they were trying to do something that no one had ever thought of. No one existed. It wasn't there, like with their Google Glass or whatever. Yeah, it didn't really catch on or anything, but it didn't exist. And neither did an iPhone. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Without that kind of vision, I don't think you can have a company like Apple, Google. I mean, not what we know of it, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Next piece of tech news. This one should frighten everybody in the U.S. Researchers have demonstrated how exactly the U.S. emergency alert system can be hijacked and weaponized. Apparently, with a pirate cell tower, it's easy to send out fake emergency alerts warning people of a terrorist attack, nuclear bomb, or other disasters. And this is, of course, something to be aware of, because we all remember the case in Hawaii where there was a mistaken nuclear alert the previous year that there were nuclear missiles incoming. This entire report was published in a full study at the 2019 International Conference on Mobile Systems in South Korea, and it talked about how it was done. But to sum it up, the researchers built a mini pirate cell tower using easily available hardware and open source software. And they used isolated RF shield boxes to mitigate any real-world harm. Thank you. And then simulated attacks in the 50,000-seat Folsom Field at the university. And 90% of the time, the researchers say they were able to pass on bogus alerts to cell phones within range. So they effectively isolated a room and sent out an alert to everybody in that room. And in the U.S., this is managed by the FCC and FEMA. It's also used to send out things like Amber Alerts and weather alerts, presidential alerts, and, of course, if there is ever a nuclear attack, that's a system it will come over. And, you know, this is a big question for the U.S.-based network, but I wonder what will happen elsewhere. Yeah, they effectively spoofed a cell phone tower.
Could that be done with, like, balloons or something? Because, I mean...
Oh, no, it doesn't need to be up in the air. It can just be on the ground.
Well, right, but that would be harder for... I mean, you'd have to have a cell of people to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, could another country reach us from, you know...
No, yeah, they could fly their planes. They could fly their planes at...
Yeah, that's what I was...
At a low altitude off the coast and do it. Oh, yeah, they could...
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's scary. You combine that with knowing that they can get into the power grid too. That could be really,
and you know, bad. It would be relatively inexpensive because it is, of course, using off the shelf components. They spent about $1,000 on their proof of concept.
So, using something like this. Essentially, the plan would be to create mass chaos.
Mass chaos.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And if there's one person that's gullible.
The example given is that you have 50,000 people at a Super Bowl event. There you go. You would end up creating an entirely different public safety situation.
People get trampled on Black Friday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine, like, if they thought there was a terrorist attack and they're trying to get out? People's going to die. They're going to get trampled.
Yeah. But it does come down to the cell carriers, manufacturers, and government entities aiming to find a solution for this. But it is indeed possible. And it just shows, I think, how cybersecurity in this day and age is something that continues to be neglected.
So neglected. And you know what? Just taking that money from just a few missiles, one warship, I don't know, a few of those
crazy
airplanes.
You could even do it with existing DOD defending.
Just anything. I mean, we spend so much money on technology that essentially is from the last...
What department does the FCC fall under? And FEMA? Is that DOD or what?
FEMA is Homeland Security.
Okay. And the FCC is just a organization, isn't it?
Wait. It might be under FTC. Is it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not an American. That's why I'm asking. That's why I'm asking an American.
But we have so much alphabet soup, man. I'm not exactly sure. I do know that FEMA is under Homeland Security.
All right. Well, our final piece of tech news is something that might be useful with the Steam sale going on currently. Yeah, there's a Steam sale. But you guys might be familiar with a website called Good Old Games, and they have their own launcher as well. Initially, they served as a point to, you know, play those games from the early 2000s and late 1990s and get them legally without needing to get them illegally. But they also have their own video game launcher that they are rebranding as Good Old Games Galaxy 2.0. And what this one's claim to fame is that it will gather all of your game libraries under one roof and provide you with a better game launcher. So the libraries it has access to include Steam, Uplay, Origin, Battle.net, Epic, Good Old Games, and Galaxy 2.0. So you'll be able to access all of your games if you just install this one piece of software that they say. They are also apparently working on integration for Xbox Play Anywhere games on PC, so that would include games like Forza and whatnot as well. So this is a pretty big deal, I think, because how many game launchers do we have?
I don't know, but I'm wondering if I should do something like this just so that I don't have, like, 3/4 of my desktop full of game icons. Because that's literally what I have.
Yeah, that might be it.
This might be something here.
So at the end of the day, there were also questions whether you'd be able to have your console libraries or Nintendo, but Nintendo hasn't said anything on this. And the idea is that this might become kind of like a Spotify for gaming, where you can create video game playlists. So you can say, hey, here's Shane's best list of games and whatnot, and you can go have a look at them. And they doesn't matter what platform they're on, they're all immediately accessible in Galaxy 2.0. So,
oh, that'd be cool.
You can bookmark
that'd
them.
Be cool.
And, you know, it separates them as well. So you can have Battle.net games, Epic games, and whatnot, all split apart, too. You can also sort by platform and type. So
see, that's cool. GOG is always, like, that's the special. They have a special place for me because it's probably a couple years ago I was looking for, you probably weren't around for this, Shane, but in the mid-90s was good for PC games. Like, they were getting better. And one of the really good ones was, at the time, remember, this is mid-90s, was X-Wing. So there was a lot of Star Wars, like X-Wing and X-Wing Alliance and then TIE Fighter. Those are all PC games that are hard to get hold of now, but I found them on GOG. Got them without some of the glitches that they were said to have in Steam and all that. So
they're also cool. Said to be bringing cross-platform chat and a unified friends list from all the platforms as well.
Now, I just thought about what a different reaction we've had to this versus the Epic Store that was trying to do some of the same exact things.
Yeah, it's because these guys aren't a Chinese company aiming to make all their money off of microtransactions and whatnot and cannibalize the industry, whereas these guys are actually aiming to create something that amounts to, at least on the surface, a platform that just unifies all the different game launchers.
Yeah.
Because I know my two biggest ones are Blizzard and Steam, and I have Battlefield 3 and 4 on Origin, but I never opened that.
See, that's the two that I use the most are, yes, it's either Steam or Origin. But that's where, Origin has my, like, that's where my Titanfalls are and my Star Wars Battlefronts and all that.
Oh, I could install Fortnite again and get rid of the Epic Launcher and not have that launch, and I could just use this client.
Oh. That is an idea.
But, I mean, hey, it's all under one roof, and it's an interesting thing to look at. But we'll definitely be keeping an eye on this. And I think, as gamers, this was an important piece of tech news to cover. So.
Well, of course, yeah.
All right. You ready to move on to our other things for this week?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So as you guys have known, we did have our two skills of the month this month, divination and runecrafting. We had a number of competitors in the divination one, but this is a recap. PK Mage 00222 got 6.9 million XP in divination, and the runecrafting one is still going on until the 28th, so we got a little bit left on this. We'll see if anything happens, but... oh, that's the wrong link. I better correct that in the notes. But the interesting part about doing runecrafting was that this was our first runecrafting skill of the month since 2010. I wish we could have got some more competitors, so maybe we'll get more people to sign up in July. But Dave got Arcane Dave got 2.1 million runecrafting XP, whereas GemAndy52 got 248K, and Jesse Pinkman got 75,400 88. And if we go back to the last runecrafting skill of the month in June of 2010, yeah, it's been that long. 6.4 million XP gained then, and roughly the same amount gained now. So interesting, isn't it? Or one third the amount, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting.
All right. We do have some achievements this week. Achievements from the month of June. So we're going to start off on those. First up is Omega with 120 smithing on June 26th. Yitzi got 99 dungeoneering also on the 26th. Moving on to the 25th, we have Juan S. with 99 agility. And on the 24th, we had Elven Badass with 99 strength and Amberlay with 120 hunter.
And then we had Ultra Dog 177 with 99 divination on the 23rd. We have... Jack Hoare with 120 range, nice, on June 21st. Nidhogg 1 with 99 agility, June 21st. And Amber Lee again with 120 mining, June 21st. Awesome.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done.
Good achievements.
All right, pick of the week time.
I got you. I got a pick of the week, Shane.
All right.
And I don't know if we've had this pick before, but if we have, we probably did not have it at this price. But for fans of the Elder Scrolls Online, you can buy the standard edition on the Steam Summer Sale for $10. Standard edition has all of the basic, has the basic game and Morrowind with it. And I thought it was like the first expansion, I think. You just can't go wrong. For $10, you can't go wrong. There's so much content packed into that game, and it's so fun. If you're into active gaming, okay, it's not an AFK game in any way.
It's not RuneScape.
It is not RuneScape, but it is so good. Like, if you're a fan of Skyrim or Oblivion or any of the Elder Scrolls Online it's perfect for you. They've also released the new Elsewhere patch, which has brought in the Necromancy class, and they're pretty cool. And this whole area is cool. It's brought in dragons, and it's knocked the vampires off their high horse, because, they were always, the big, awesome combat people. Their recovery was just so good. But fire damage is a real bitch when you're a vampire, so the dragons have really been having fun with them. It's just a really, really good value, a really good buy, and I highly recommend it. For $10, you can't beat that. Some people will say, don't buy Elder Scrolls ESL on Steam. You should buy it through its own website. Because if Steam goes down, then ESO goes down. That is true. But my experience is I've only not been able to play Elder Scrolls one time. Out of the whole time I've had.
Okay.
It's been one time. So I don't know if that's as big a deal as people make it out to be.
Yeah, probably not.
$10, man. You just can't beat it.
Yeah, and you know, I will say, even if you're just interested to have a look at it, comparing it to RuneScape is an interesting thing to do, because previously, back in the day, you wouldn't expect anything like this to happen in RuneScape. But as we head into the Sixth Age and continue with the development of RuneScape 3, we wind up having more and more of these epic storylines. And you play through ESO, the storyline in ESO, because it is a quester's game, as we were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It is like, okay, this is what RuneScape could be. And if you look back at RS3, it's like, this is what the Needle Skips was in its own unique RuneScape way. RuneScape is here.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And for me, the thing that I just absolutely love about questing in ESO is everything is voiced and it's dynamic. And they're not just little fetch quests. Like you, and I have yet to run into a puzzle that has left me sitting here and trying to call my friends saying, what color is this, guys? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I haven't ran into any of those problems. So I'm just a big fan. And it's something that, I mean, obviously RuneScape is my main MMO, always will be. But I have enjoyed ESO several different times that I picked it up and started playing again and starting a new character. And I just love it every time. So that's my pick of the week.
All right. So moving on from that, what have you been up to this week, RS-wise or other?
I've been taking it easy a little bit, but I've been doing mining with Junior because we hit the 90. Was it 90? I think it was 90. 90
for the Animicas?
For smithing.
Oh, okay.
So I hit 90 for the Animicas for mining earlier, and then I switched to smithing. I finally got out that up to 90, and now I'm back to mining.
Nice.
And I've been doing light Animica, and I learned something very valuable that 5 seconds of research would have told me, and I would have not lost money. But I'm not real much for researching, so I didn't do that, which I should have. But would you believe that stone spirits for light Animica are twice as much as the ore?
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. Yeah. And I bought some. Yeah. Like a dummy.
Yeah.
So live and learn.
Yeah. Obviously, we're still waiting for that economy to improve itself. So.
Yeah, twice as much. Like, so I guess Animica stone spirits are great.
If you can you find make some money on them. Those.
Yeah, if you can get them. Yeah. Well, there's always a dummy like me that's gonna
part from their money. Feel bad about that.
Yeah. But that's
all right. As for me this week, I have been continuing with the player owned farm breeding. I also did a couple of herb runs and some spirit weed incense sticks. Yeah, those ones are still really good, believe it or not. Those ones are still selling for like 21, 22K a stick. So if you farm your own or you even gather your own ashes, that's a great thing as well. But aside from that, on RS, interacting with the storm breaking event, because, you know, as I mentioned, that is a good way of getting those wood cutting fragments. And since then, I've just got over 10K of them, and I have 6 of the outfit pieces already, so I only need 9 of them left. And if you do the math on that, each one is worth 3,600, so that's 32,000 pieces. So I'm already a third of the way there for having my whole Sentinel outfit. So that's what I'm currently working towards in game. But beyond that, you know, I had this realization that maybe, you know, at some point in the future, whoa, comp is actually attainable. And no, I don't want to give anyone a heart attack. No, I'm not going for that. I'm just sharing this realization I had with everybody this week, given the update and whatnot. And I checked in my achievements list, and I'm over halfway there. By just playing the way
nice.
I do.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying I'm going for it, but I'm over halfway there. And I just play – and I am what I define as a casual player, in that I don't, you know, bend over backwards to go for any of these huge goals or anything along the lines of that. So, but I believe that's it. I don't think there's anything else. So if you're good, we can wrap this show up.
I'm good.
Well, then, thank you for joining us, everybody. And if you want full show notes, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. You can also chat with us in-game at Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. And don't forget the Patreon page at patreon.com/rsbnb for as little as $1 a month. Gain access to all of those monthly bits, including what we talked about, the future of hype and anticipation in RuneScape. We're recording that one next week. And, of course, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.